Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. Access entry 1234.RV1615, certificate number 41916. Streaking.
What do you think about astrology? What's your take?
Astrology?
Yeah. This is how I'm going to get into streaking.
Do you want to get into streaking?
Via astrology. That's my one demand.
That's the path that most people take into streaking. They start with astrology. Well, I am not, as you can imagine, a believer in astrology.
What?
But
classic Sagittarius.
I find it fascinating.
No, wait, what is your sign?
I'm a Virgo.
Virgo.
I'm a Virgo man, which when I was in my early 20s and living in a community of people that did follow astrology, when it was discovered that I was a Virgo man, everyone rolled their eyes. Oh, of course, Virgo man. Oh, wow.
I don't know what that means.
I didn't either. But it's apparently it's something.
The 40-year-old Virgo.
Apparently it means that I'm particular and, I don't know, controlling, creative,
it seems
bearded.
Like, it seems like the same adjectives often work for multiple signs.
Sure.
And sometimes for the same sign, both an adjective and its opposite can apply.
Yeah, that's right.
You are temperamental, but also placid.
Yeah, super, super dependable, but also whimsical.
My issue with astrology has always been that it does not suggest a mechanism.
What is your sign?
I'm a Gemini, of course.
A Gemini, of course. Yeah, actually, you are pretty Gemini. The mechanism being the vibration of your midichlorians?
Well, exactly. What is the midichlorians of astrology? I mean, say what you will about organized religion.
Okay. How much time do you have?
Let's take a break. At least it posits a mechanism. No matter what, whether it's you're a pagan Norseman or a... or a Methodist.
Right. Or the opposite.
It's essentially the same mechanism, right? There's some kind of omnipotent sky god who has put us all here.
Except for the earth gods, the ground gods, tree gods.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be a sky god.
Well,
even
if you're a pagan, there is a sky god.
Oh, sure.
There's a bunch of others.
Sure, there are other gods.
The others are optional in many of these traditions.
Right. I was thinking, God, I was being really monotheistically normative there, wasn't I? It doesn't have to be a sky god, but of course, there is a sky god. It's not the sky god.
Yeah, he's just one of the crowd.
But you're saying not convinced that the mechanism is the pull of gravity of aligned astral bodies.
Well, do people even say that? So I would be happier with astrology if there was some pseudoscience, if they were saying, yeah, of course, when the planets line up against a certain constellation, the gravity pulls the brain cells of the developing newly birthed baby in one direction, therefore making you more stubborn if you're born in August.
Isn't that what they say?
Nobody says that.
Well, I always assume that the alignment of the planets has to have there has to be a material hand that makes you a thing. It's not just that these far off distant bodies are that, and then you are that.
I need astrology people of any time period to respond with your blather.
Right.
John and I want to know. Are you claiming gravity, magnetism?
You know what it is? It's spooky action at a distance, Ken. It's S-A-D. Once again, it's sad.
Astrology is the ultimate spooky action at a distance.
Yes.
I mean, and it's a very plausible form. These are giant cosmic bodies. Like, if something is going to affect whether or not I'm temperamental because I was born in October, why not a big giant star?
It's a Schrodinger's cat.
Or planet.
It's a function machine. It's a red light on a box. You know, all those things.
All those things at the same time. My version of astrology has always been this.
Streaking.
We're still one step removed. We're still spookily at a distance.
Talk about spooky action at a distance.
From the topic of the show. What was the Billboard number one song? Have we ever done this on the show? What was the Billboard number one song on the charts the week you were born?
Oh.
Because surely that would have more of a cultural influence on someone than where Mercury is.
Depending on what pulls you.
Let me look. 1969, right?
No.
1970, right?
No.
What year were you born?
I was born during the Johnson administration, the waning days of the Johnson administration.
You're 68?
In 1968.
Oh, you're going to get good music then.
I am. Yeah, it's probably, it could be like Last Train to Clarksville or something. What is it here?
I got a list. But now, what's your birthday again? It's in the spring.
It is not.
When's
it's
Virgo?
Not in the spring. It's in September of 68 is when I was born.
Oh, I got some bad news for you.
Oh, no.
You missed Hey Jude by like 1 week. What's your birthday?
Well, now, wait a minute. Can that be true? People Gotta Be Free by the Rascals.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Well, at least I missed Hello, I Love You by the Doors.
Yeah, that August was a pretty rough. Well, do you think maybe People Gotta Be Free by the Rascals does prove my theory? Like, what song of 68 could sum up John Roderick better than People Gotta Be Free?
Well, listen, here are the options in 1968. Hello, Goodbye by the Beatles would have been great. Judy in Disguise with Glasses, hilarious, great novelty song. Green Tambourine, only a number one hit for a week.
Do you remember you and I, were you with me that time at the Mariners game? We were fighting about Green Tambourine, and I said it was like...
If you and I were there fighting, if we were fighting about it, then I had to have been there.
Maybe it was me and George Meyer. I was complaining that it was kind of minstrelsy, like it was like kind of some establishment take on psychedelia. Somebody trying to sound like Dylan or the Beatles.
I love that you're getting uppity about hippies. You know what, man? Stop co-opting my culture.
It was either you or George were just like, no, it's a good song. You were really sticking up for Green Tambourine.
That sounds like George sticking up for Green Tambourine. But look, it could have been Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. It could have been Mrs. Robinson was a number one.
Tighten Up by Archie Bell and the Drells.
See? Hello, I Love You is bad. Harper Valley PTA. I'm 1 week away.
There was a one-week gap between People Gotta Be Free and Hey Jude, and you barely missed Harper Valley PTA being your song.
Love Child by Diana Ross, and then I heard it through the grapevine. 1968, great year for music, and I do feel like maybe People Gotta Be Free...
That's not bad for you.
It's not bad, but it's not the top.
But it doesn't have to be your favorite song. This is astrology. This is what's determining your personality.
Oh, I see. That's
why you're such a free spirit and a rascal.
I'm a tiny little baby, and this is blaring out of car radios everywhere we go. I'm sitting on I-5 with my mom in my little bassinet, and they're taking me back to Kingston, Washington.
Certainly that's going to affect your personality
people
outcome more than what
just
Venus is doing. I mean, maybe what we should be doing is going back 9 months, quite honestly.
Oh, all right. Well, so 9 months from September, it would have been Hello, Goodbye by the Beatles, which totally makes sense, right? I was, September babies are all basically conceived on New Year's Eve.
I didn't realize that Judy in Disguise with Glasses and Green Tambourine, both of which strike me as kind of Beatles cosplay novelty,
right?
Hippie novelty songs, were back-to-back number ones.
People couldn't handle the Beatles and they needed to back it off a little bit and get some eat some corporate Beatles for a few weeks.
It's like how when you go to like different countries, like they have to be a certain percentage of the movies in the theaters have to be domestic.
Uh-huh.
You know, like if you're in Canada, like 1 hour of TV every night has to be Canadian TV or something. That's how the Lemon Pipers and John Fred and his Playboy band got on the radio.
You know, Hello Goodbye was A-B'd with I Am the Walrus on that 7-inch single. You knew that already.
Was this before they started doing the Beatles started doing double A-sides, like Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields, I guess because John and Paul were not getting along.
I'm sure that this was a double A-side.
Double A-side? Right?
Yeah, you couldn't. Which one of those are you going to pick?
The reason I bring this up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Was there a reason? Or I was going down a rabbit hole on the Beatles singles chronology.
Well, I know listeners will be doing this right now. They'll be looking to see what songs were on the charts in the year 30,000 when they were born.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I bring this up is because I was very excited when I thought of this to look it up and see what was number one in late May of 1974 when I was born. And I was appalled.
Was it by Wings? Was it something by Wings? Was it Electric Light Orchestra?
I would have loved those. Oh my gosh, are you kidding? No, it was a novelty song, and not even the good fake The Birds kind that I was just making fun of. It was Ray Stevens's The Streak.
Well, yes, they call him The Streak.
Oh, The Streak. Sure, I remember The Streak.
Are you familiar with the fastest thing on TV? Are you familiar with the work of Ray Stevens?
Let's see. Oh, wow. You missed The Locomotion. He did Everything is Beautiful and...
Everything is beautiful.
Well, so that's the funny thing about him. He's probably best known for novelty songs like The Streak and Ahab the Arab.
Right.
So it's quasi-racist novelty numbers.
Right.
There's one about a pirate who wants to sing and dance. Do you know this novelty song? I want to sing and dance.
About a pirate, huh?
He wants to be a pirate in the Pirates of Penzance?
I'm not sure. I'm kind of stunned here. You missed Paul McCartney and Wings by a week. Band on the Run was June 8th, 74.
Oh, so I'm 2 weeks
two
away.
2 weeks out.
Somehow Ray Stevens is keeping one of Paul's best solo numbers off the charts by the virtue of his streaking song.
What's crazy is the Band on the Run was only on the top of the charts for a week, but The Streak was there for 3 weeks prior.
America was streaking crazy in early 1974. This is not a case where the song is so indelible that it propels the fad. This is the case where the fad is such a big deal that even a song like The Streak can keep Band on the Run, a beautiful little mini symphony, out of the number one spot.
I have never done this, gone and looked at the number one songs for a year.
Is that
in
true?
Succession? And
this
it's
is
amazing.
This is what I spent my childhood doing.
1974, Time in a Bottle. Starts off, then The Joker by the Steve Miller Band. You're 16, the extremely problematic Ringo Starr song.
The rest of the show is going to be you turning into a Billboard nerd.
The Way We Were, and then Seasons in the Sun, Sunshine on My Shoulders, Benny and the Jets.
I really wish it was a John Denver or an Elton John song. I mean, I feel that would explain me if it was a John Denver song, for example.
You know, my birthday in 1974, when I was already, am I 6 years older than you?
Apparently so.
That seems incredible. Wait a minute, are you 45?
5.5 years older, because I was born in May.
Yeah. God, that accounts for a lot of my greater sophistication and worldliness.
And more tendency toward Three's Company metaphors instead of family ties ones.
But when I was 5.5 on my birthday that year, I shot The Sheriff. Was the single. That's so good. Anyway, so did the song Streakin'?
Yes, I was naked when I was born.
It does not seem like that had a shaping influence on you.
Well, I later became famous for my streak on the television quiz show Jeopardy.
God, you're just really awful.
I think there is something of the streak in me. But it's true.
That's a yellow streak.
But not the...
Oh, dog.
But not... You're right. Not the nudity angle. I did not come from an... You're not from a naked family, right?
No. You seem almost like a never nude. Are you like a...
never nude. Yes, even when I streak, I wear sweatpants and a hoodie, and I call it jogging.
No, you know, my dad was a Greatest Generation, right? He was born in 21. So
were any of those nakeds?
They were
maybe
not,
in Europe. They were.
There were no hippies in my hippies were my older brothers and sisters, and I didn't. They did. Oh, but I do have a naked. I do have a nudist story. What would it be? My first cousin once removed, who was a generation older. She was a hippie. She was married. The minister at her marriage ceremony was Timothy Leary.
Uh-huh.
And she married like a kind of famously married a priest. They were in Life magazine. It was like a whole, they were part of a whole hippie scene. And her kids, she had some rule in her house that kids under the age of 8 had to be naked. And I remember she was a nut and not a good.
They had that at Neverland Ranch, yeah, I think.
She was not a good mom either. But I remember going to her house at an age where I was self-conscious about nudity and being told to take off my clothes.
Wow.
And running around in the yard with a bunch of other naked kids.
Was it freeing?
And it was not. Because halfway through this day, you know, I kind of got used to it. And it was like, I guess we're all naked, so I guess it's fine. You know, I don't know. I was 7. And so very aware. And then I looked up and there was a neighbor kid who was watching us over the fence. And I was so humiliated. I ran into the house and ran into a closet, I think, and just hid in the closet until the nightmare was over.
So do you believe, are all naked families like kind of a post-counterculture thing? I mean, maybe not in, I mean, Europe has sauna culture and the Japanese are always bathing with their kids, right?
It's, yeah, nudism isn't a bit, it is more accepted in Germanic countries.
Like places where it has not been sexualized so much. Like maybe it doesn't have to be a counterculture.
Or the other way around. It hasn't,
hasn't been sexualized enough?
No, it didn't become desexualized, right? Or I mean, I guess if you're a family of 8 people all sleeping in a one-room house, you can't be that precious about it. But at the same time, I don't know. It feels like nudity is fine if you're under 10 or over 40. But if you're a 13-year-old, there's no, I can't imagine.
And yet that's the only really time American society is really all into naked boys hanging out together. Like
when they're 13. Oh,
yeah. Like that's when you start showering in middle school and high school because you smell.
Oh, I thought you meant you're going down the Mississippi on a raft.
Well, that too. There's less of that today.
Yeah, there is that enforced nudity that happens in junior high where they're like, you have to shower after gym class because you're hormonal and you stink.
And my memory is there was never even any kind of like, hey, look, we know you don't want to be naked. That's normal. This is just how it works. So really, it's just like everybody hop in.
It was cracking the whip on me, and I had never been, you know, I was a shy kid. Like I didn't let my parents in the bathroom after I was, you know, if I was in there after sure. I was 7 or 8.
I feel like that's normal in our culture.
But all of a sudden I'm 12 and I'm like in a gym shower. It was awful. And you know, in my school, if you didn't shower, you couldn't get an A in the class. And the coach would stand in the shower and say repeatedly, shower down to get an A. Shower down to get an A.
I like how it's, you can still do the impression. It's really deep in your metabolism.
And I didn't want to shower down. I did not want to get an A. I did not get an A.
You, what was the highest grade you could get without showering? B+.
Not a B+, I don't think. No, like I think
was he rating your showering? He was like, you're showering not so great. That's a B+.
He was forced, I think, to give you a B, but he didn't want to. And I don't think I ever got better than a C in gym.
Oh, that's funny. I'm a non-athletic kid who always got an A because they were like, look at him trying out there.
I didn't try.
there you go. I think we figured it out.
I pouted.
It's not that different from any other class.
No, I sat in the corner sulking like I did throughout school.
I had European friends who came from like naked families.
That were like comfortable naked.
Yeah, just that was kind of default status at home.
But I don't know. It felt always like Europeans were rubbing our noses in that, like Canadians do with healthcare.
Not literally, I hope. Yes. You Americans, you are so repressed.
Oh, you're so repressed. Why don't you walk around naked like we do in France? Like the Canadians say. Why don't you get free healthcare like we do in Canada?
In Quebec. I don't know.
I'm from Alberta, but I cannot stop.
Maybe if I was from some place where me and my parents had always been naked together a lot, I would know the upside. But from my point of view, it seems hard to see the upside of knowing a lot of details of your parents', middle-aged parents' naked bodies.
Or your siblings, or your friends' parents. Like none, I mean, I'm not a never nude. Get me naked as far as I'm concerned, but not around other people.
Get me naked, you're always saying.
Get me naked is my t-shirt that I'm having made.
But you never wear because you're always naked.
No, I have it on. It's just under 7 other coats. yeah, I don't. I once walked what is, so I was walking across Europe at one point.
We've heard.
and I walked out of Vienna and was walking along the Danube. And at some point, I started to see naked people.
Mm.
You know, there are people all around, but then all of a sudden there's a naked person and then another one and then another one. And pretty soon I'm on a stretch of this bike trail along the Danube, which was understood to be the naked beach. And it's a river beach.
Does the Danube need a nude beach? More like the Danude.
Ugh.
Am I right?
You aren't. But for at least a mile, maybe two, it was a crowded, naked beach. But not like a – I always think of nude beaches as somewhat sequestered,
sure,
behind a fence,
secluded,
or whatever.
Yeah.
This is just like, well, I was on the bike trail. I'm trying to get to the other end, you know, and I got to go through here. But it was funny. At first I was scandalized, and then – after about 10 minutes, it became somewhat normal. And then after 20 minutes, I started to feel like, what's the big deal? Why was I? And, you know, after a half an hour of like waving and tipping my hat to naked people, I was like, nakedness is normal. Look at them. They're just normal.
So you and I are the weird ones. It would just take us a couple hours,
I think.
And we would become nakeds.
By the time I was out the other side, I was like, why isn't everybody naked? It's a hot day. I mean, it's not like I took off my clothes, but it stopped being scandalous or even titillating and became just sort of like, oh yeah. And
did it seem more comfortable? Was that the issue?
No.
Like, it is too hot for me to wear all these clothes.
No, I don't think that the difference between having a swimsuit on and no swimsuit on is. One time I was with a friend, we were swimming in the ocean in the Caribbean, and he took off his swimsuit and then he was swimming naked. And
I think you need to get a trusted grown up.
He dove down to pick up a conch shell off the bottom of the ocean or whatever. And I noticed like, oh, wait a minute, he's naked. And then we swam around for a while and I started to feel dumb because he was naked and in the ocean. And I was like, in a swimsuit. So I took off my swimsuit.
It seems like you're very prone to nudity.
Well, and then we swam around naked and it was nice.
In all these stories, it takes you maybe 20 minutes to be like, oh, I'm the weirdo.
But then
why do I have underpants?
Like, I didn't want a turtle or something to bite my wee-wee. Like, you know, I didn't.
That's perfectly normal, John.
It wasn't me.
Let me validate you. Okay. None of us wants a turtle to bite our wee-wee.
Okay, thanks.
But my kids, you know, in Seattle, you see some... So there's nude bike riding.
Only on the solstice.
Well, I think when it's warm here, there are parts of certain beaches that kind of become clothing optional. I think there's north part of Golden Gardens.
There's that beach that we used to have, that naked beach over in off of Capitol Hill, but it turned into a creep beach.
Yes.
Do you remember when it was a nice naked beach and then turned into a creep beach?
I was on neither side of the battle, but I've heard.
Yeah. In the early 90s, it was great. You could go down there and do whatever you wanted. Nobody could see you. And then the creeps started to come around.
Well, I mean, that's going to be a problem if you're a naked.
Yeah.
Is that you're in a world that is mostly made of clothes.
Right.
Who are going to be not irrationally interested in your nudity. I mean, they shouldn't be creeps about it. They should leave you alone, but hey.
They're interested.
You're the one outside with no pants on.
That's right. I mean, the creep beach was small enough that, I mean, what the creeps did was they just came and sat up in the corner in the tall grass and just sat there. It's not like they did anything.
When I was in Belize earlier this year, there was somewhere I saw a sign that was like, clothing optional beach, no staring or gawking, and I literally couldn't tell if it was... It was like on one of these beachfront bars, and I literally couldn't tell if it was an actual kind of sex positive best practices sign or if it was one of these funny beach signs.
A joke that dad would put in his man cave?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like the funny signs that are like, no working during drinking hours, ha, ha, ha,
right.
You know.
Notice our pee doesn't have any pool in it.
I literally saw a notice our ool sign in Belize, and I don't think I'd ever seen one in the wild.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a hotel actually had a welcome to our ool sign. So, but no, I've I was with the kids at Gasworks Park, I don't know, last summer, and we climbed up to the sundial, and there's just a bunch of nakeds with their bikes just hanging out on the sundial.
I think that
it was not solstice.
I think that there's strength in numbers if you're a naked. If that's it was true. One naked person up there, you'd be like, put your clothes on.
That's when the cops come.
Right. But if it's like a bunch of naked,
if there's
you're like,
eight,
oh, I guess there's a thing happening.
The cops don't even. Yeah, exactly.
It's like Stonehenge.
And this is comes in to our story of America's brief fascination with streaking, is that there is strength in numbers. There must be something in us that wants to do this. But if it's just one, we're not going to do it. But if a buddy dares us, or if all of us on the floor of our dorm do it, that's a whole different ballgame. Just to get back to Ray Stevens, the reason why I mentioned him is because he took advantage of the streaking fad with his big, big hit. But he's an unusual character because at the same time as he's recording these kind of goofy novelty songs, you know, because he's a Southerner, he's also singing these very sincere, I think Everything is Beautiful might have been won a Grammy, might have been a number one hit.
Really?
And it's just some kind of Christian gospel. Do you know the song?
Yeah,
everything is beautiful
absolutely.
It in its own way.
It was the type of thing that we, I think we probably learned it on the recorder in
exactly.
third grade, right?
Like I Want to Teach the World to Sing.
Yeah, exactly.
It starts with a children's choir singing Jesus Loves the Little Children or something. And then, you know, Ray comes in and sings this gospel song. And somehow he is maintaining both these careers at the same time, alternating these ultra sincere Christian anthems with his goofy novelty work.
He won two Grammys for Everything is Beautiful and Misty.
Oh, yeah. He had a cover of Misty. Yeah.
But he was, you know, he was working in the country vernacular, which...
country does allow for both.
It does.
God and goofy jokes.
You can be corny and also sincere in country, and it doesn't alienate your fans.
There's not a lot of Venn diagrams where God and corny jokes actually... overlap.
Well, I thought you didn't want me to talk about organized religion.
No. But no, it's true. You got the whole youth pastor overlap.
Right.
But country does allow for both.
For sure. I mean, if you think about the sincere moments on Hee Haw.
it would be like today if Weird Al were also singing kind of sappy Jonas Brothers kinds of love songs.
Right.
And he had two careers. Like he would put out an album of parodies, and then he would just do a series of Butterfly Kisses kinds of love songs.
I feel like once you get your foot into the music business, at least at this point in time, you maybe throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. We've talked about C.W. McCall. And his comedy hit
Convoy.
Convoy, and it turned out that the genius behind it went on to form Mannheim Steamroller. So
I forgot about that. He just liked big vehicles.
Yeah,
he liked semis and steamrollers. That was his. That was why he got into music.
He never did a steamship or a cruise liner.
He didn't. He wasn't a member of Jefferson Starship.
He
could have kept getting bigger and bigger.
As far as we know, he wasn't. Maybe he was. A lot of people in that band I didn't recognize.
John, do you remember the Daily Deal site, meh.com, that has come up on Omnibus before?
Absolutely. Although I pronounce it meh, not meh, whatever you said.
I think I said meh.
You sounded like a sick sheep.
That's how you pronounce the name of their site.
No, meh.
They're the ones that bought the giant styrofoam version of my head.
Oh, of course. That's like languishing in a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah, Ark of the Covenant style. And this week we're working with meh again. I'm not going to get my head back. Meh.
Not meh.
What? You keep saying vowels I'm not even saying. Don't say meh, Ken. Say meh.
You're saying meh except with like some kind of like accent aigu.
You're gaslighting me.
All right, go ahead.
We're working with them this month to see which of us, you or I, have the best personal story. So this is a little competition.
Oh.
It's not just an ad. It's now a storytelling competition.
It's a competition which I will win.
It's a poetry slam. You are famous for your storytelling abilities. But here's the thing. You don't get to decide if you win. It's going to be up to the listeners. Because if they go to meh.com/omnibus and they buy something this month, then they can use either the code Ken, if they liked my story, which I will tell on Thursday's show, or they'll enter John if they enjoy the story you're about to tell right now, and they get $5 off their purchase, and meh will keep track. Meh will keep track of who has received the most coins in their tip jar.
I see.
Your story or my story.
So I'm going to tell a story this week.
No, you're going to tell a story today. I'm going to tell a story on Thursday.
I see. I'm going to tell a story today. You're going to tell a story on Thursday. People are going to go to meh.com.
Meh.
And they're not meh. Meh.
Not meh, John. It's meh.
And they're going, well, and for, the first thing people should vote on is who is pronouncing meh correctly. But then they're going to enter either Ken or John into the code.
As their little coupon code.
I see.
At checkout.
And then at the end, it's going to tally and we're going to learn who people's, which story people prefer.
Yes, in a month we will be able to announce whether your story or my story won in terms of absolute meh usership.
Now, is meh trying to trying to divide and conquer the Omnibus project?
Yeah, because that's their goal.
We've never really been in competition before except for this constant competition for who's more woke that you keep introducing into the show.
I think all two-person podcasts are a kind of competition.
Oh, I see.
Who's going to get the good line?
But my further question is, do you and I, does the winner of the contest actually get a prize?
No, we get nothing.
So, I see.
We get Matt to buy ads at our regular rates.
Thanks,
Matt. Yeah, and they already bought the big styrofoam head.
Right.
So I feel like I have a little bit of a lead
on one
already.
More thing that does not benefit me at all. But this is a situation where people who think of themselves as Ken people are going to vote for Ken.
If they like the story.
Well,
it's not a stand-in for absolute loyalty.
I mean,
do you think it is?
That's kind of how people work, isn't it? Like, you know, maybe John's story was better, but I like Ken's. So
yeah,
I'm
heard you. I've
Ken.
Heard you tell stories, and really, you're getting by on a lot of personality.
Yeah, right.
This is not a great story, but hey, here's my John confidence and bonhomie. So yes, you'll get all those votes, I think. And next month we'll announce who won.
Oh, okay.
Who got the most map purchases, and try another round.
Okay. All right. Sure. So it's just now we're just telling a story?
Tell a brief story of any kind.
A brief story of any kind. Let's see. When I was a kid, we would go to the zoo here, the Woodland Park Zoo.
Love it.
And there was a little narrow gauge railway that went around the inside the zoo. There was a little, you know, a kind of park, a little amusement park.
That takes me back.
And then this railway went out from the sort of gated amusement park area and around the zoo. Remember this?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful little sort of Knott's Berry Farm sort of half-scale railway. And as a kid, I was fascinated by it. But at a certain point around 7 or 8 years old, it was no longer enough for me just to ride the train passively like a little tourist. We went to the zoo all the time, and I started to feel kind of proprietary about it.
About your train.
About my train, and I wasn't just going to ride in it like some kid on a field trip. And so one visit to the zoo, I asked my mother if I could borrow her handkerchief, and my mom's always carried a handkerchief. And I tied it around my face like a bandit's hanky, and then waited in the bushes for the train to go by. And jumped out of the bushes, ran along behind it, and jumped up on the back and rode basically hooky bobbed on the back of the train, pretending to be a, you know, cowboy.
Outlaw, yeah.
And I had a wonderful time, and the people that were on the train thought it was funny. And so after that, every time I went to the zoo, I would bring a cap gun and a handkerchief. And rather than go to the zoo and see the animals, rather than go to the arcade and try and pop balloons, I would just lurk in the bushes waiting for the train to go by, run after it, jump up with my cap gun, and say, "This is a stick-up," and then ride the train. And I did that until the zoo had to, like, put restrictions on, you know, they had to post a guy on the train and also had to, like...
A special zoo Pinkerton.
Sort of fence off the bushes. They instituted all these, because, you know, other kids got into it. It became like a thing. And I ended up making it a thing I did whenever I visited amusement parks. So at the Nut Tree in outside of Sacramento and at Knott's Berry Farm, where they actually had adults doing that, I would always run after the train. It was the only thing I liked about amusement parks after a while.
Was holding up the train.
Was holding up the train.
So we learn from this story never to encourage you in any of your antics, or you will just run whatever it is into the ground. I love that your story is about riding the rails. This is a very formative young John Roderick story.
It was one of the first one, you know, because they keep the train. It was at a, it was going at a clip. I had to run, but it wasn't so fast that I couldn't catch it.
If you're confident that John's story will defeat mine, you can go to mayor.com/omnibus and use code John to get $5 off your purchase.
I'm sure my story is going to be the victor, you know, compared to whatever your story about doing crossword puzzles or Sudoku or whatever.
If not, if you want to wait till Thursday and hear my story, then you can go to mayor.com/omnibus and use code Ken. Either way, you'll save $5, but don't forget to do your civic duty. Please vote.
That's right. Please vote by buying something at meh.com and then entering John in the code.
Meh.com/omnibus.
Not meh. Meh.
Meh. The Streak is Stevens' biggest hit. And are you familiar with The Streak?
I remember it on the radio.
Stevens does all the voices. He's a news commentator who shows up at a supermarket and then a gas station and then a sports event because someone has just streaked the premises. And he also, somehow he's able to interview, he also plays all the people that are getting interviewed, including there's always kind of a bewildered yokel who's trying to get his wife not to look at the streaker. He's always saying, "Don't look, Ethel."
Don't look, Ethel!
Like he thinks his wife will be besmirched in some way.
Well, I'm here to tell you, you get desensitized to streakers and then pretty soon you're like, why do I have my swimsuit on? And that might have happened to Ethel too.
Well, Ethel apparently is in all three locales.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at the end where a college basketball game is struck, it's not clear what the past tense is. Stricken?
Streaked.
Is streaked. I mean, that's a normal place to streak. I'm not sure why you would streak a filling station, for example, or a produce aisle.
I think what happened is someone was streaking. It was a long-distance streak, and the filling station was just no?
Impossible. Impossible. How could Ethel be in all three locations?
Oh, I see.
These must have been hours apart.
Maybe the person was streaking Ethel.
Maybe there are three people named Ethel, each of which has a concerned husband.
Right.
The funny thing about the streaking fad, because I think you look back at a fad and you're like, boy, nothing sums up the 70s like Pet Rocks or streaking. But like all fads, it was very short-lived.
Is that right?
Yeah. There was maybe 6 months where streaking was the thing.
People were streaking at sports events.
Yes. And I mean, it was mostly, as you probably know, a college campus phenomenon.
Right.
And it dates back to earlier kind of nude campus shenanigans, which in this country go back to the 19th century.
Mooning? That came later. What are some nude campus shenanigans, and why didn't I go to that college?
You should have gone to Nude Campus U.
Their team it's online now.
Their team is called the Shenanigans. Yeah, exactly. It's a, you know, there will be a time of year when we all get drunk and run naked to the statue of Thomas Paine. Or on January 1st, we all jump naked into the Rappahannock. It's that kind of...
I see.
And at times when, in a time when college campuses were not coeducational, because only men got educations,
sure,
there was not even any worry about sexualizing it. This was just...
Well, now, wait a minute. That's a little normie.
Well, so, you know, you can play it off as what a good time we're having.
Right.
But given what we now know, there's got to be some kind of homoerotic element.
Shower down to get an A.
Do you think that's the secret origin of all these traditions is like the three closeted kids in the class are like, hey guys, here's what would be hilarious.
No, I think it's the gym teacher every time. All right now, everyone, line up.
I'm going to give you an A, if you know what I mean.
Well, I have to confess, I went to Gonzaga University for a couple of years.
Not in the 70s.
In the mid-80s. But Gonzaga in the mid-80s was like other places in the 70s. It was still trapped in time. And I went streaking.
So there were still, was it semi-organized?
Yes.
New fun runs? Or was it just you having a few too many beers?
It was like late, not even that late, but like at night, someone came through the dorms and was like, everyone at, you know, 11 o'clock, we're all streaking over to the, I don't remember what, the library or something.
And nobody said, that ended in early 1974.
No, because one of the things about the 1980s is that we were all weirdly nostalgic for what seemed like a really fun time that had just come to an end.
Right.
Right, by 1985, you know, AIDS had made sex not fun, and Reagan had made drugs not fun, and but we could all just barely sort of almost put your hands on the fact that, like,
you could find old copies of the Lampoon.
Yeah, and like Animal House just happened, and why did we miss it? So there was still some of that, like, maybe we can recapture the glory days if we just have a kegger and go on a panty raid.
It's a little bit illusory, this idea that there was a golden age of streaking. I mean, obviously, back to the early 1800s, you've got campus fun runs, but it really, like so many things, it was an effect of global warming.
Huh?
The winter of 1973 into 1974 was unseasonably warm.
Huh.
At southern campuses, there were days in the 80 degree mark in March. And this was a phenomenon that largely came from the South, at universities like Memphis State or the University of Georgia.
Right.
It would start out with, at Memphis State, I think it was a quarterback and a buddy doing it. And then it would, you know, hiding in some bushes, running out across the lawn to shock a girl's dorm or whatever, and then peeling out. And then it starts to catch on. The word streaking was apparently first used by a reporter at the University of Maryland watching a little fun run and noticing how fast they all streaked by they were not eager to spend too much time in one place. And so oddly, this came out of the South, a part of the country we might think of as, is it Bernie?
It was Bernie.
I am once again asking you to interrupt your podcast and make me a small donation.
No, I was trying to watch the video of a streaker.
Of course you were.
But Bernie had an ad on there.
Keep your perversions to yourself, John. You can try to find, I mean, and this is obviously the reason why the media becomes attached to this thing.
Sure.
Is maybe they could, you could see a, you could put some bare bottoms in Newsweek magazine.
Sure. Young people streaking around. Who wouldn't want that in Newsweek?
So it starts, the scale of it starts to grow. You know, if a couple hundred people do it at Memphis State, then 1,000 people are going to try to do it at University of Georgia. For one thing, there's strength in numbers, as we've said.
Right.
And also it becomes more of a happening.
Sure.
If there's just a crowd of flesh.
Only so many co-eds can sit on top of a flagpole, but thousands of them can run around naked.
There were maybe fewer co-eds than we're thinking. You know, we like to imagine this as a equal opportunity activity.
But it was mostly dudes.
It was kind of a sausage fest, I think. Like, that's my analysis of looking at photos. There are accounts of women streaking, but often it's problematic because they're getting harassed.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it was like sponsored by a local bar, like a wet t-shirt contest.
Ladies night. No, sadly, they're getting pinched. Do you remember a time when pinching was both a kind of harmless seeming form of sexual harassment and also a comic punchline, you know, like the secretary straightens up at her desk when the lascivious boss goes by.
Yeah, and like a comic in Playboy magazine where, yeah, it's like, oh, Mr. Johnson, you know, but yeah, or like a stewardess would get pinched.
But,
sure.
But what a weird, come on.
Pinch.
Let me just pinch someone's buttocks and then they'll know of my interest.
Yeah.
No one wants to get, even if it wasn't sexual harassment, which it is, nobody wants to get pinched.
You know, my mom was a waitress in the 1950s, and it's why she, to this day, hates Shriners.
They're pinchers?
They're pinchers. They pinch waitresses, Shriners, apparently.
It's the one thing I know about them.
I mean, the
little hats and the little cars and the little fingers.
For most of my life, I hated Shriners because they pinched my mom. And then people started wearing fezes as part of like the celebration of nerdiness. And all of a sudden I was surrounded by Shriner fezes. And I had to make peace with this.
I like how your mom hates Napoleon and Shriners.
Yeah, basically. No, the list is longer than that. We just haven't covered all the topics.
So streaking catches on as a campus fad, and there hasn't been a good campus fad in a while, right?
Well, Vietnam made all campus fads seem dumb.
That was the problem. Yeah. You know, we think of campus fads as kind of a 20s phenomenon, all the raccoon coats and the goldfish swallowing and the flagpole sitting and whatnot.
Right.
Then
the campus fad for a while was protesting the war.
So if you read contemporary reports of streaking. I mean, there's always some kind of blue hairs writing into the paper complaining about the declining standards. But really, for the most part, people kind of seem delighted by all this public nudity.
Yeah, sure. Like, finally, the kids are back to having fun.
That's exactly it.
Really?
It's like, look at, you know, they're not threatening to burn down the administration building anymore. They're just running around naked. Doesn't that remind you of the kind of shenanigans we used to do, Karen?
Yeah.
You know, I think there really was that kind of a... So people are very... they seem kind of charmed by the streakers.
I wonder what nakedness fad is going to finally tame the millennials in boomer eyes. What's going to be the thing where the boomers are finally like, oh my God, they relaxed.
So millennials, it's time to think of something fun to do naked.
Yeah.
Some nude pickleball or something.
Yeah, nude pickleball. Nude Mesoamerican ball game.
And that will end. Okay. Any game can be a ball game if you're nude enough. That'll be the thing that ends okay boomer. The streaking becomes kind of increasingly, you know, in order to get attention, if everybody's streaking, nobody is, basically, you know. So once there are big groups of nakeds running around college campuses, it becomes very important to try new novel forms of streaking if you want to get in the paper. So, for example, a nude student skydives, parachutes onto the University of Georgia campus.
Right.
Add the third axis, very clever, add the Z-axis to your streaking.
That's right. Three dimensions.
Somebody streaks a Pan Am jet between New York City and London.
What? You streak a jet?
How would you do it?
Then you just, you like walk up the aisle once and then you just have to sit in your chair or do you put your pants back on?
I think it happened like this. Head to the can in the back, disrobe, streak up to first class, and then streak back.
Because you kind of have to be running for it to qualify as a streak.
A huge part of streaking is the speed, and I think that's not an accident. I read interviews with people who got into streaking, and none of them find it all that titillating or even revealing in a way, because it's often done at night, it's often done in a group.
And you're running.
So you're a blur. I mean, you're clearly naked and people are going to have to see things they don't want to see, but they're not going to associate your face or identity with it.
Right.
Right. The speed is essential. Often they would wear socks and running shoes and nothing else.
Wait, I have another streaking story.
You have two streaking stories?
One time in the Palouse, I was down there with a group of people, middle of the night.
Explain the Palouse, by the way, to the future.
The Palouse is the kind of farming area of southeastern Washington that's like big rolling hills, very fertile ground.
You may remember it from our episode on Lake whatever it was, right?
Yeah, that's right. Lake Missoula.
Missoula.
But we all, and who knows what we were under the influence of, but we all took all our clothes off and ran through freshly plowed fields, and it was extremely liberating. You can run really fast when you're naked. That's what I remembered.
I think it feels like if you've taken whatever you've taken and you've had the nighttime breeze on you, I think you feel like you're going very fast.
Oh, we felt like we were running so fast, so much faster.
Do you think you actually were?
It was, well.
Do you think it's the weight of a polo shirt and Levi's that's been holding you back?
What it was Mercury and Saturn were pulling me. Through the field.
Through the Palouse.
It really did. I mean, I think it's probably like the moon illusion. It just seemed like we were running faster.
Well, there's two things happening. You're feeling breeze on parts of your body that don't normally feel breeze, and you're getting more jiggling.
There is more jiggling.
From parts of your body that kind of, you feel like you're, the kind of jiggling you would feel if you were running at 100 miles an hour with clothes on.
Right.
Happens probably at a much lower speed when everything's hanging
the
out.
The jiggle threshold.
It's much lower. So there's a couple things making you feel like you're running. Some other headlines in Anchorage, people streaked in -8 degree weather.
Yep. In fact,
did you see a lot of Alaska
streaking? Oh my God, I've got a story about that too.
You have a third streaking story.
It's the third streaking story, but this was, we were all in a hot tub and it was whatever, 10 below. And we jumped out of the hot tub and ran naked across a snowy field and then threw ourselves down in the snow. And rolled around until our skin was burning. and then ran back and jumped back in the hot tub, and then we were burning, double burn.
So this is the kind of the polar bear club kind of, yeah.
Actually, I have a fourth story. I didn't realize I was such a streaker. Anyway, go on.
I like how you started this episode not being a naked, and you've got four stories, not including the Danube. It's four with an asterisk, if we're counting Gonzaga, the Palouse, the hot tub, and what's the fourth one?
It was a sauna. It was a similar kind of like run out of the sauna, except we ran down to the end of the dock and jumped in the lake.
It's interesting that streaking came out of the balmy south, but it seems like if you had had your way...
It's a very northern
thing. Yeah, you could have it spread from, you know, it's like the Finns with their sauna culture.
Yeah.
Some other novel streaks that made the headlines at Carleton College, again, the north, Minnesota, production of Measure for Measure, somebody streaked the curtain call.
Right on.
Very disrespectful to the actors.
I don't know.
You're doing one of the minor comedies. We want nudity. A city bus in Atlanta, Georgia. A bunch of streakers streaked the bus.
Inside the bus or outside?
Inside the bus.
Oh, see.
The driver was later asked, were they men or women? And he said, I don't know. They were wearing masks.
That's pretty good. That's like a Yogi Berra-ism.
That's right. There were occasional arrests. At the University of Missouri, one engineering student was charged with indecent exposure with intent to streak.
Oh, he hadn't yet gotten up to speed.
Well, he was apparently, yeah, he was exposing, but not yet streaking. Streaking apparently requiring a certain velocity.
Well, that's the thing, right? If you just take your clothes off and stand there, you're a flasher.
You're a creepo, yeah.
But if you're running...
Well, it seems like then you shouldn't say with intent to streak. He was about to ameliorate the crime.
Right.
They stopped him before he could lessen the sentence by being in motion, by blurring the offending images.
Right. They caught him before he flushed the weed down the can.
With intent to flush. I guess that's the thing. He's trying to hide evidence of his crime.
By running.
Just like somebody destroying their stash.
Yeah. Running from his nudity.
But you can't run from your nudity, no, John. Your nudity follows you. It's the one thing you can never get rid of. Even Nixon, it sank into the popular culture to such a degree that on March 7th, an embattled Richard Nixon was asked if the Watergate scandal had started graying his hair, because as with many presidents, his temples were noticeably grayer.
Right.
And Nixon said, oh, no, that's not graying. They call that streaking. And he got a big laugh.
Oh, he's a comedian, Nixon.
For his topical humor. Yeah, not famous for his quick wit, but that's not bad.
No, it's all right. It's a Ken Jennings level.
It's kind of debate zinger level, but clearly he couldn't have been prepped.
Right.
Mr. President, if they ask him, like John, like Haldeman's not like, sir, if they ask about your temples, I've taken the liberty of writing some streaking jokes.
I've got the gag.
And Ray Stevens had the very good luck of already having this song in the can as this is unfolding.
He wrote it in advance of the fad?
Yeah. And then he paid off some students. He is from Georgia. No, like when the fad was in its very early days, he had recorded this song. And then by the time 15 copycat songs came out, his record was already being pressed. And
yeah.
So his song was rushed out. And it happened to come out just like, I think, 2 weeks after the night of April 2nd, 1974.
That fateful night.
That fateful night, we all know as we study streaking history, when Robert Opel made his imprint on history. Do you know who Robert Opel is?
No.
Come with me now, if you will, to the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
Oh, I've been there.
In Los Angeles. The Academy Awards are being given out. What would that have been? The 45th annual Academy Awards? Anyway, spring 1974. Elizabeth Taylor is about to give the Best Picture Award.
This was the heyday of the Oscars for me.
Can you imagine?
Anytime you got Elizabeth Taylor.
All those wide lapels and all those still living.
They're all alive.
Still living 40 stars kind of creaking up there.
Lucille Ball is there and Clark Gable is there.
No, Clark Gable was in fact dead. But Jimmy
Clark Gable was dead
there.
In 1974?
Clark Gable died young. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so sad.
That's a bit of a bummer. This story I'm about to tell is a bit of a bummer also. I just want to warn you that this story is fun until it isn't.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So, you know, because
we've
had some fun so far, but I don't want to leave out the sad ending of this story.
Can I laugh halfway through or do I have to maintain it?
We're going to have a good time until, and I'm going to give you a sign. What kind of signal should I give you?
Nothing.
I'm going to take off my clothes.
No, nothing lascivious. Don't wink at me. This whole show is making.
I'm going to clink on my glass at the moment when the story is about to take a sad turn.
Good.
But for the moment, it's not sad. Elizabeth Taylor is about to give the Best Picture statuette to The Sting, as it turns out. a long sideburned, wide lapelled look at the Depression.
such a wonderful film, still a classic.
I just watched it with my kids the other night, and it kind of holds up.
Yeah, it does.
Actually.
It does. Well, Paul Newman, always charming, and Robert Redford, always charming.
They're fantastic. Like, I don't want to.
Don't. Spoiler alerts.
Well, I was just going to, like, reveal maybe a little too much about my sexuality when it comes to Paul Newman and Robert Redford. Yeah, but yeah, you also don't want to spoil the ending of this thing. It predates that kind of surprise ending of a heist or con movie.
Right.
And so I'm sure the reason why it wins Best Picture is audiences are just flabbergasted by that ending, which today you would see in any Ocean's movie.
Yeah, they got M. Night Shyamalan-lammed.
They did. They were pre-Shyamaland. Elizabeth Taylor is being introduced. You know how in the Oscars, someone has to introduce the person who's going to introduce the person?
Elizabeth Taylor doesn't just walk out on a stage.
No. She needs David Niven to introduce her.
Oh, the great David Niven.
Kind of the last dapper British man of his era. We probably talked about him in the Gentleman Jewel Thief episode when we were talking about the Barefoot Bandit, because he was the jewel thief in the Pink Panther movies.
He sure was. He was also he was also James Bond at one point.
Yeah, the parody,
right?
Peter Sellers one. Yeah, and Phileas Fogg in Around the World in 80 Days. I like Separate Tables very much. I like his work with Michael Powell in the 40s. You got to see Stairway to Heaven.
I see him often in my war movie podcast, Friendly Fire, because he appears. We just watched the Guns of Navarone.
Yes, he's in the Guns of Navarone. Yeah. How did you guys take 2 years to get to the Guns of Navarone? It's the ultimate dad war movie.
Because we pick movies randomly. We have a 120-sided die, which I have right here.
I didn't realize the selection process.
And although we have over 200 movies on our list, I roll the die. Here's the Foley.
The crazy thing is, you do it at the beginning of each show. You don't know what movie's going to come.
We haven't seen
until
this movie.
You're recording.
No, at the end of every show, I roll the die and we pick the next movie from a list. And it's why the show the first 6 months wasn't all the greatest films, and then we spent the next 7 years just watching all those weird Dutch productions of like Norseman, like basically white supremacist porn movies that have war themes.
I would like you to watch some of the Powell and Pressburger World War II British movies of the 40s.
Okay.
Which are weird and fantastic. And one of them has David Niven as a fighter pilot who dies in the first minute, or does he?
Oh.
So David Niven comes out to introduce Elizabeth Taylor, who will introduce the Sting.
I bet his tuxedo was exquisite.
Yes. The lapel stretched from here to Santa Monica. And he's giving a very long-winded, like, you realize the Oscars are long today, but he just talks forever. And while he's about a minute into this long speech about the transformative power that the magic of cinema can have in our lives.
This is by way of introducing Liz Taylor.
Liz Taylor, yeah.
Well, you know, everybody was drunk then, too. Yeah, that's the other thing.
Like, I'm sure it was supposed to be Elliot Gould, but he couldn't get on stage. He fell down. Behind him suddenly appears a nude, kind of a hairy nude man running toward Niven and to the left, if this is the Zapruder film. He's coming toward us and to the left. And
really?
And do you not remember this?
No. Well, I wasn't. I don't think in 1974 I was watching the Oscars.
And Niven quit. Well, I certainly wasn't. I wouldn't be born for 51 days.
Right.
And Niven quips, that was bound to happen. But how funny that the only laugh this man will ever get in his life is showing off his shortcomings.
Oh.
So he's.
Oh.
He has.
Talk about a wit.
Rapier like wit in the moment. The streaker turned out to be when he gave his press conference after the event, turned out to be Robert Opel, a former Governor Reagan speechwriter, who was at the time teaching ASL in the Los Angeles public schools, and I believe was fired for his temerity at the Oscars. He had slashed through a brand new cyclorama, you know, the big screens, colored scrims.
Oh yeah,
behind a stage that gives the illusion of a color gradient in the sky or whatever. Some brand new scrim that I think had already been rented for the following Friday.
Cost a lot of money.
Yeah, he just slashed right through it, naked, and ran across the stage. The business manager for the Oscars that year was a man named Robert Metzler, and he swore for decades that the thing had been faked, that it had all been set up by a producer who wanted an early example of what we would today call a viral moment.
Really?
Yes. So there's a conspiracy theory regarding the Oscars streak. According to Metzler, he and his wife were outside the event, and Niven asked for his Metzler's wife for a pen. David Niven did. And she gave him a pen, and he wrote down the shortcomings quip, which had just come to him. And this was 2 hours before showtime.
Well, I mean, it's that I can't imagine that Oman, what was his name?
Robert Opel.
Robert Opel would have agreed to have his physical self mocked by David Niven if he'd known. If he'd known he was going to get burned.
Well, you don't tell the streaker he's going to get roasted.
Oh, that's like a pretty
bad
roast.
You got Niven. I kind of agree with the conspiracy theory, because watching the live cover, you can see the clip on ABC or whoever was there. Oh, I frame by frame it, John. The guys, Opal's genitals managed to stay just out of frame in his entire movie. And maybe I'm seeing a cropped version, the sanitized crop version, but it certainly looks like the camera angle has been chosen so that you can see that someone is streaking behind Niven, but you can't actually see anything
PG-13. Sure. So they didn't have to stop the broadcast. It wasn't a thing where it got out scandalized.
Yeah, nothing. It would have been live, and nothing would have been pixelized at the time. So if I'm seeing what live TV viewers were seeing, it certainly looks like the director knew
where
almost
to
the inch where Robert Opel and little Robert Opel were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Opel later became a queer icon. He moved to San Francisco. He actually ran for president in 1976.
Using the streaker platform?
Yes. His slogan was "Another Crooked Dick." It's a Nixon pun.
Yeah, you could get by like zooming on Nixon for another 10 years after that.
So maybe he did not mind the shortcomings pun. He's kind of leaning into it, or at least part of him is. In 1978, he actually opened a groundbreaking art gallery in San Francisco that kind of introduced America to erotic art of Robert Mapplethorpe and Tom of Finland.
Oh, really?
So he was kind of instrumental in the gay art movement of the late 70s. Tragically, in 1978, tragically, in 1978, his gallery was held up and armed intruders actually shot him. So
that's terrible.
He only lived for 4 years after his Oscars prank.
Oh, dear.
Which is sad, and probably why there's not a whole lot of kind of fond "where are they now" reminiscences about this very funny moment, because it's got this sad postscript. Yeah.
Tragic, although hopefully unrelated ending. It was just a heist gone wrong.
Yes. It had nothing to do. If he hadn't, I mean,
as far as we know, it could have been, again, Haldeman.
Unless it was a very angry Elizabeth Taylor, you know, sending her goons, sending out Larry Fortensky to show him what's what.
And that concludes Streaking, entry 1234.RV1615. What's going on over there?
Sorry, I'm opening mail.
Certificate number 41916 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook and Instagram will censor any attempt to post streaking photos.
Sounds like you have some experience here.
It's going to close your account down if you show genitalia. And I think if you're a guy, you can show nipples, but if you're a girl, you can't. So anyway, you can thwart them by not being gender normative and confuse the Instagram filter bots into reassessing whether or not the nipple is an obscenity.
Think of all the money that has gone into trying to train artificial intelligence to tell the difference between nipples and navels.
Nipples or pug noses. Nipples or baby bottles. Anyway, we should free the nipple, as I am fond of saying. That's another t-shirt I have.
I don't believe you say that at all.
But you can go to our social media accounts, which almost certainly will have zero nudity, at Omnibus Project. Also at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick. No nudes.
Please.
At all. You can send your nudes to us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
Do not send us your nudes. Send John your nudes.
You can go to my Instagram account, still no nudes. You can send us Polaroids of your nudes to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Are you encouraging people to use the U.S. mail for this?
You can send us nude statuettes from your Northern European pagan religions.
The box I was opening appears to be Hawaiian in theme.
All right.
Someone sent us Maui crisps.
Okay. Are those banana chips?
I'm not sure.
What are they made of?
I'm not sure what's going on here.
Did they send us any Kona coffee? Any Maui Waui weed?
It appears to be
a big box full of stuff.
It appears to be crocheted socks.
All right. I support it.
Oh, Maui crisps are actually some kind of jerky. Artisanal beef chips. Have you ever had an artisanal beef chip?
No, but I'm willing to try one.
They're all wrapped in plaid paper, and it's not clear why. Maybe as Christmas presents, or are they trying to hide the label? Is this like the Pepsi challenge? Are we trying to... Are we supposed to not know we're eating Kiawe barbecue taro chips?
See, that's what I was afraid of, that they were taro chips. Because I can't tell whether a taro is a potato or not.
Do you not eat a lot of poi when you're in the islands?
I don't. I eat a lot of barbecue pork.
Maybe this note will explain. Oh, no, it's just a Christmas card.
If you want to go to the Facebook page Futurelings, don't post any nudes there, please. But if you go to the Futurelings Reddit page, of course, Reddit is just full of nudes. And then I don't even know if you can post pictures on Discord. I don't understand it yet. But we have Futurelings groups in all three locations.
Thank you for sending us this Hawaiian beef, Perry.
What else? There's so much stuff in that package.
There's a little squirrel? I don't know. A small publisher called Toynes sent us some copies of their books, including How to Replace an Empty Roll of Toilet Paper.
I already know how.
Which is an 82-page instruction manual.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is fun. Song lyrics in chart form.
That seems interesting.
These are funny. Percentage of people who were kung fu fighting.
How many? Everybody.
100% were kung fu fighting, 0% were not.
That's good.
Statistic probability of getting fooled again. I presume this is of the Who.
Well, I don't think you're going to get fooled again.
They do not look. Yesterday, it's very high, but as the chart progresses through today and again, it gets very low. It becomes clear that the Who will, in fact, not get fooled again.
Right.
Very fun. Thank you for sending us these books, Toynes.
Yeah, thank you very much. Those seem like a good way for Ken and I to pass the time sitting here by the fire at Omnibus Cabin.
Reading about how to replace toilet paper rolls.
I'm sitting on the couch trying to read, and Ken is across the room interrupting me by reading aloud all of the song lyrics in chart form.
You got to check out this one. It's about like Tiny Dancer.
Anyway, please support Patreon Omnibus. Please support Omnibus by contributing to our Patreon
page. It does support Patreon.
At patreon.com/omnibusproject. Your generous contributions have made Ken's and my life as podcasters so much more rewarding.
And you'll be rewarded as well. At the various levels of donation, you can hear bonus episodes of Omnibus, which we have a lot of fun with. There's one particular level where you can actually suggest a topic for the show.
Yeah.
And this very episode, Entry John, was the first time we have honored one of those.
Oh, wait, was this a suggestion from a donor?
Krista Dahlstrom.
Oh, thank you, Crystal.
Krista with an A.
Thank you, Krista. I was going to say Crystal Dahlstrom, but it's Krista Dahlstrom.
She wanted to hear about streaking, and hopefully not because she knew you had somewhere between 5 and 11 different streaking stories.
The more I think about it, there's quite a bit of streaking in my life. I'm a little bit embarrassed.
But that's a cool perk that exists at one of the higher donation levels. Thank you, Krista. You're very generous.
Thank you, Krista. I hope you enjoyed the show.
And if not, you do not get a refund.
Yeah, and those of you who are like rolling your eyes or chewing on your cud about the fact that people now can pay to have Omnibus entries... go take a flying jump at a rolling donut. All the go take a flying streak at a rolling donut.
All the suggestions we've gotten have been very omnibus-y.
People appear to understand what belongs.
What should be in the omnibus. And streaking certainly should.
Absolutely.
We love a good campus fad.
We do.
John loves nudity.
I do.
I do not.
I mean, I mostly do. I guess it turns out I like it more than I thought.
Well, you're always in the bathtub.
Yeah, and we didn't even count the times I took my swimsuit off in the ocean and all these other streaks that were like...
Does that count as streaking to take your swimsuit off in the ocean?
Yes, I was swimming pretty fast.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We survived streaking. Hopefully that means we can survive anything. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, Krista Dahlstrom's recording may be the final entry in the omnibus. I'm very sorry for the rest of you who donated. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the omnibus.